the Song of Solomon, chapter 2. And we're going to give our attention this evening to just a single verse that is tucked away in this 8-chapter book, but a verse that's incredibly insightful and powerful. The session tonight is one of my favorites. I think we'll have a lot of fun tonight and we'll laugh a good bit. But I also think that we will come to see and understand some things that are really essential if we're going to enjoy the marriage that I believe that God has for us. In the Song of Solomon in chapter 2 and verse 15, you read this very simple but I think profound verse. Catch us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. Now let me read it again. Catch us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. Now you say, what in the world does that verse mean and how does it relate to marriage? Well, in this particular verse, Solomon is comparing our marriages to a vineyard or to a garden. And of course, a vineyard, a garden that is going to flourish and do well, must be tended, it must be cared for, and it also must be protected. And in the ancient Near East, even to this day, foxes are extremely dangerous and crafty, especially when it comes to getting into a garden or a vineyard. And in fact, in the ancient Near East, in their ancient literature, foxes, it was said, surprisingly to me, were actually quite fond of grapes. And so, of course, foxes are small, they are sly, they are sneaky. You really hardly ever see them. But when you're not looking, they can slip into your vineyard. And they can eat away at the roots of the vines as well as the grapes as they are in the process of maturation and coming to fruition. And so when it comes time to harvest the grapes, if you have not been careful and you have not been on guard, you may discover that there are no grapes in your vineyard, for the little foxes have snuck in and they have destroyed it. And Solomon's point is simply this: our marriages are just like that. They're like a garden. They're like a vineyard of grapes. They have to be cared for, they have to be tended, and they have to be protected. We often hear the statement, don't sweat the small stuff. And that may be true in one context, but I'll tell you this, it is not true in marriage. When it comes to your marriage and your family, you better sweat the small stuff, because it is the small stuff that usually will cause a marriage to come unraveled. In other words, most marriages do not get in trouble over the big, humongous issues of life. Most marriages get in trouble over little things. Those little foxes that sneak into a relationship and do serious and sometimes even irreparable damage, and you never even realized they were there. You never even understood or saw that they were there doing their devastating work until it was almost, and in some cases, too late. And so tonight, what I want to do is sort of set out two categories of foxes. And then inside of those two categories, we're going to see what I call some subspecies. In other words, I'm going to say this. First of all, there is the category of foxes that I call dangerous foxes. And then there's the second category that we're going to look at that I call the foxes of difference. And so we have to be on the lookout for those little foxes of danger and those little foxes of difference that indeed can do serious damage to our relationship. And so if you look on the very first page there where you see it saying, men are from earth, women are from earth, deal with it. And of course, I'm playing off John Gray's book that men are from earth and women are from Venus. And the fact of the matter is, no, we're not. Neither one of us is from another planet. We're all from the same planet. And we live in the same house, and we share the same bedroom, the same bathroom, the same closet. And when you get to that type of close proximity with another person, I probably ought to be careful in doing this, but the other day, Dr. Moeller ran into a young newlywed male in the bookstore. And this young man had only been married for, I believe, a few weeks, maybe a few months, so we'll at least stretch it out that far to protect the guilty. And he walked up to me and said, well, how are you liking marriage? Isn't it great? Isn't it wonderful? And he said, oh, it is wonderful, Dr. Moeller, but boy, I've learned a lot of things. He said, oh, I bet you've learned a bunch. I bet you've learned a whole lot about your wife that you never knew before you got married. And Al said, he began to roll his eyes, and he said, oh, Dr. Moeller, she has an opinion about everything. It doesn't matter what it is. If I bring up an issue or talk about doing something, she always has an opinion about everything. And sometimes they match up and sometimes they don't. And when I decide I still want to do something another way than the way she wants, she gets her feelings hurt. And it's just, I'm discovering that every issue is something that she's thought about. And some of it she got from her mom and dad, and some of it's just the way that she is. But she never showed this to me when we were dating. Oh, no, the little foxes don't lurk in the dating period. They're asleep during that particular time, and they're out, you know, just taking it easy. It's when marriage happens that they begin to say, aha, now it is time to make our move. And so a number of things you just discover after you're married, and you never even saw it coming during the dating period. Well, what are some areas of warning or danger that, in a preventative sense, we need to be on the lookout for? Well, let me note these, and we'll move through them kind of quickly. Number one. Your marriage may get in trouble when God's role for the husband and the wife is reversed or abused. I call this the fox of role reversal. And here's my point. God made men to be men, husbands, and fathers. God made women to be women, wives, and mothers. And no one is as good at being a husband and a father as a man. And no one is as good at being a wife and a mother as a woman. And we live in an age where people want to tear down all gender distinctions. They really want us to move toward, I'll give you a $25 word here, an androgynous kind of society where all gender distinction is broken down. Well, I'll tell you something. Those of us in this room who are men, who are males, we ought to be proud that we're men, and we ought to be proud of our masculinity and not apologize for it one whit. On the other hand, those of you that are women should not apologize for the feminine way that God made you. And indeed, that is nothing to be ashamed of. It is something to be proud of and to rejoice in. But if those roles get reversed, your marriage can get into serious trouble. And furthermore, if those roles get abused, your marriage can get in trouble. One example, God calls men to a leadership assignment in the home. God calls us men to be servant leaders, to be shepherding leaders, not CEOs, not frustrated drill sergeants, not some type of, you know, knuckle-dragging Neanderthal. That is not the biblical portrait of a spiritual leader in a home where a man is loving his wife as Christ has loved the church, and he is nourishing her and cherishing her. So we've got to be sure that the roles don't get reversed, but we also must be sure that the roles don't get abused either. Secondly, a marriage will get into trouble when initial sensual love fails to develop into true intimacy. This is what we call the fox of intimacy stagnation. We were talking about this the other day in class when we were talking about the flexibility and sometimes the ambiguity of the word love. And one of my students said, you know, when I say I love ice cream, I really don't mean that I love ice cream. I really mean I like it. But I like it a lot. Because if I say I love ice cream and I say I love my wife, I don't mean that I love my wife in the same way that I love ice cream. They're really quite different from one another. And that is indeed the case. Now, in that same way, when I got married at the age of 21 and Charlotte was 19, I really do believe I loved her as well as a 21-year-old boy, and that is what I was, a 21-year-old boy, could love anything. But if I were to be brutally honest with you this evening, I would say to you, you know why I married her? Well, number one, she looked good. She had big brown eyes and brunette hair. She had a pretty face, and I liked her even better from the neck down. And I said, you know what? I could get along looking at that for the rest of my life, and chasing that around the house and hugging it and squeezing it and kissing it, that really kind of got my engine pumped up. And so I thought that was a good reason to marry her. And then I began to investigate a little bit more, and I discovered that she actually was a nice person, and she was kind of nice to be around. She didn't irritate me all the time. In fact, most of the time, it was really cool. Then I discovered that she knew how to cook, And after all, somebody's got to know how to cook in the house. And so it wasn't going to be me because I had a kitchen bypass at birth. And I don't do anything in the kitchen. I don't even like to boil water. You can burn your fingers. So I found out she could cook. And then I found out that she knew how to clean a house. And she knew even how to iron clothes. Now, she's taught me how to do that in the years since we've been married. But at that time, I'd never ironed anything in my whole life. And so I said, look at this. She looks good. She smells good. She's fun to squeeze and hug and kiss. And she can cook and she can clean. And man, this is a great deal. Why wouldn't you marry someone like that? Now, you might say to me, well, you're extremely selfish. And she should have turned you down flat for being such an egocentric, self-centered kind of person. All right, smarty pants, let me ask you all a question. Guys, why did you marry your wife when you married her? Oh, I'll tell you, Brother Danny, I married me an ugly woman. I ain't never liked looking at her from the first time I saw her. And in fact, this has gotten worse through the years. And furthermore, she ain't nice. She's mean as a snake. She can't cook. She can't clean. She just makes everybody miserable that gets around her. And I knew that from the get-go. Now, the fact of the matter is, that's not why you got married. You got married for some of the same selfish reasons that I did. Now, again, let me put it in context so that you do not think worse of me than you ought. Did I love Charlotte when I married her at 21? Yes, I did. In fact, I think I loved her as much as a 21-year-old boy can love anything. I really do. But now that I am 46, and we will celebrate 25 years of marriage on May the 27th of this year, if I say to you, I loved her when we got married, and I love her today, it does not communicate. It doesn't work. I have to say something like this. I loved her when we got married, but I really love her today. And you see, I become convinced of this. That initial, you see it there, initial sensual physical attraction. It is enough to get us started. In fact, when we're young, I doubt we have enough sense to get started on much more than that. I just really don't have that much confidence in our ability to go beyond that when we're 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 20. I just don't have much more confidence in your ability to do a whole lot more than that. I just don't. But if you stay there, fact is you won't stay there. You're either going to slide back or you're going to move forward. And if that initial sensual attraction doesn't develop into that true intimacy where there's not only a joining of your bodies, but even a joining of your souls, then your marriage will get in serious trouble. Number three, your marriage will get into trouble when it is not being nourished by regular and genuine communication. We call this the fox of silence or the fox of stonewalling. Now, I know I've mentioned this earlier, but let me bring it up again because it's that important. Five major areas in every marriage have to be monitored throughout the duration of the marriage if the marriage is going to do well, and they're in this order of importance. Number one, communication. Number two, finances. Number three, sex. Number four, the rearing of your children. And number five, your in-law relationships. Now, I'll say it again, because you need to just get this in your mind, because it is true. Number one is communication. The number two area that has to be monitored is your finances. Number three is sex. And finances and sex flip-flopped about 5 years ago. It used to be communication, sex, finances. But again, we live in such a materialistically driven culture. We now know that more marriages actually get in trouble and get stressed out over financial issues than they do sexual issues. So, communication, finances, and by the way, if that goes south, so does number three, sex. And then number four, the rearing of your children. And number five, your in-law relationships. And here's the deal. If five, four, three, or two get in trouble, it will always be because number one, communication broke down and you did not understand and know and communicate with each other effectively in these and other areas as well. And so again, I don't care if you are like the Sphinx. I don't care if you are made of stone and all you can do is occasionally nod your head up and down and back and forth like this. You have got to learn to communicate better than that. And furthermore, remember, communication is not just talking. Communication also involves listening as well. And some of us are really good talkers. But I discovered that a real missing art in many, many marriages today is that ability to be a good listener. A good listener. And that's crucial not only as a mate, it's also crucial as a parent as well. Number four, your marriage will get in trouble when forces or persons outside the marriage encroach on that all-important time the two of you need alone to build and maintain a healthy relationship. I call this the fox of time ill spent. Now, guys and gals, listen to me for just a moment. There is no doubt in my mind anymore that the most valuable commodity that you and I have in the day and age in which we live is time. It is absolutely the most valuable thing that you have. You made a conscious decision to invest an hour plus tonight to be here rather than being somewhere else doing something else. And when you spend that time here tonight, it's gone. And it is gone forever. Everybody here has the capacity and the ability and the know-how to make more money. Every one of us. But none of us has the capacity or the ability to make more time. And once you spend it over here, then you don't get to spend it somewhere else. And so if you have to do like I have to, and get out your address book or your calendar, and I'm still a Neanderthal. I've just got a little paper deal. I don't have one of these little palm palettes or a blueberry or blackberry. What is that? What Al's got? The blackberry? You know, got all this stuff on. That's too complicated for me. I just need a little pencil and a little piece of paper. And if I put like an X on February the 14th, then I don't take anything. That day's blocked out for something. And usually if it gets an X, it's a Charlotte day. And if it gets a little bald figure, it's a boy's day for me to go to the ball games to watch the kids do something. But if that's what you've got to do and just X out stuff on days and it doesn't matter who calls, who wants you there, you don't go. Because I'm sorry, I can't meet with President Bush today. I've already got a commitment to go to a T-ball game. Now, I hate T-ball games. It's an impure sport and it would drive any purist into near hysteria. But if it's your child playing T-ball, then it may be more spiritual for you to go to the T-ball game than to meet with the president. After all, you think he's really going to listen to you anyway? I don't think so. Well, I just want to go see him. Well, I understand that. But push comes to shove, I'd rather my kids know that I want to see them. Because they'll remember. The president won't. It's a matter of perspective and just wisdom. But guys, time. Man, it is so, so valuable. Things just move so fast. And there's so many demands. And here's what I've come to understand. Some of the things you and I have to learn to say no to are good things. They're good things. They're just not the best things. And that takes, I think, real spiritual commitment and devotion to go before the Lord and say, all right, Lord, here's my time. You're the Lord of it. Now, help me know where to spend it wisely, because once I've spent it here, I don't get to spend it anywhere else. The fox of time ill spent. Number five, your marriage will get into trouble when real and personal needs are being met more and more outside the marriage. We call this the fox of outside interference in boys and girls. This is the fox that leads to that horrible wolf, and it's a wolf, called adultery. You see, you may have, as a woman, a need for intimate communication, intimate conversation, but your husband never talks to you. Or maybe you're a man and you have the need for admiration and respect, and your wife just tears you up and beats you down all the time. Well, suddenly in your life as a woman, somebody comes into it. Maybe it's at work. Maybe it's at church. Maybe it's where the kids play. And there's this person that now will just take interest in you and talk with you and even listen to what you have to say and give a semi-intelligent response. And boy, your heart just soars, or you're a man. And at work, those who work around you praise you. They're nice to you. They tell you how valuable you are to the company and to the business and how you could not achieve what you're doing apart from you being there. And man, your self-esteem just goes off the scale from this woman, but not your wife. And when you allow that type of thing to happen, you begin to open the door for an extramarital affair. Now, very quickly, because it is that important, look at the next page where you see at the top of it warning signs of infidelity. Warning signs of infidelity. I'm just going to move through this quickly. But guys and gals, let me begin to speak to you from my heart. I'm tired. I mean, I am just tired of people committing adultery. I am tired of looking in the face of brokenhearted mates and devastated children. I'm just tired of it. I mean, I'm just worn out. I'm almost scared in this one sense. I love doing what I do. But I'm always afraid to go into the office every day for fear of what I'm going to hear about another minister who has, we say, fallen. Well, he hasn't fallen. He's gone out and, as a conscious act of his will, committed adultery. And you know what he's done? He has brought shame to the name of Jesus. He has done serious damage to the body of Christ. He has broken the heart of his mate. And he has lost the respect of his children. And I do want to say to all of us this evening, you just hear me and hear me well, and this is not too strong. When you are unfaithful to your mate, you will cause your children to hate you. And they will. They may eventually get over it like 20 or 30 years down the road, although we actually know now they never completely get over it. They may forgive and try to rebuild, but you will lose the respect. You will not be their hero ever again. I guarantee you that. Now, you're telling me a few moments of pleasure is worth losing all of that? I don't think so. You say, well, it must be, again, rather sinister as to how it gets into our life. Oh, it is. Look at the top of the page. Number one, if you have that feeling that you're just going through the marriage motions and your marriage is sort of ho-hum, sort of boring, there's not a whole lot of life to it, then be careful because you're cracking the door open because most of us think wrongly. Now, listen to me. Most of us think wrongly we have a right to be happy. Now, as a Christian, I'm not talking about just a secular person. I'm talking about as a Christian. Do you really have the right to be happy? No, you don't. You have the responsibility to be godly and to be holy. That's what you have. I can't find a verse that I've looked. I can't find a verse in the Bible that says you and I have the right to be happy. Now, I'm not against being happy. I'm a big fan of happy. If it comes down to happy or sad, I vote happy every time, okay? So that's not where I'm coming from. But I'm telling you, you don't have a right to be happy. You have a right, a responsibility to be godly, holy, and to honor the Lord. That's what you have as a child of God, as a slave, a bondservant of Jesus Christ. Number two, inventing excuses to visit someone of the opposite sex. Number three, increasing male-female contacts in normal environments like work, choir, recreation, and so on. Number four, being preoccupied with thoughts about another person. And by the way, only you and God knows what goes on between your ears. We were talking about that in the executive cabinet today at the seminary about how you just really never know what goes on between someone's ears. You don't. I've known men who have fooled their mates for years, later to confess things that were going on up there that she never knew. No one ever knew except God and that man. But you know right now, every one of you right now know if all of a sudden as I brought that up, somebody that ought not to be between your ears is up there. You know, and God knows. Number five, exchanging of gifts with a friend of the opposite sex. Number six, making daily, weekly contact with someone by phone. Number seven, putting yourself in situations where a friend or employee might become more. Number eight, having to touch, embrace, or glance at a person of the opposite sex. And number nine, spending time alone with anyone of the opposite sex. Please add four important words after number nine, even on the internet. Even on the internet. It is the fastest growing arena for adultery and infidelity in America today. Overwhelming. It is the fastest growing. It has not yet eclipsed workplace adultery. But it is making a running start and a gallop after it. And so even on the internet, spending time alone with someone of the opposite sex. You say, Danny, Some of this stuff to me sounds a bit legalistic. I don't care. You say, you really live this way? I sure do. So you don't spend time alone with anyone of the opposite sex? No. No, I'm committed to spending a time alone only with Charlotte. Because I came to a really amazing realization a number of years ago, and that is this. If I'm never alone with a woman other than my wife, I'll never commit adultery. Isn't that amazing? You ought to pay big bucks for that, and I'm giving it to you free tonight. I mean, seriously. If you're never alone with a woman other than your mate, you won't commit adultery because you ain't going to do it in front of a bunch of people. I guarantee you that. And so you say, well, why are you that way? Because I know what a man's capable of. If he's at the wrong place, at the wrong time, with the wrong person. That's always a formula for the wrong thing happening. So I just don't do that. You say, well, what about number six? You never call anyone of the opposite sex on a daily or weekly basis by phone? No. And I got a lot of women that are friends to me, a whole lot of them. But is there a woman in my life that is, quote, a close confidant? No. Just Charlotte. That's it. Just my wife. Nobody else. So no, if I'm going to talk to someone for inner circle counsel other than my wife, I'll call a man. I'll call Al Mohler. I'll call James Merritt. I'll call Bill Cottrell. I'll call someone that of a male gender with whom I'm close. But that's my counsel. No, there'd never be a woman in that inner circle ever. It's not even a consideration. You say you don't give gifts to people of the opposite sex. No. Now let me clarify. I give my secretaries a gift on Secretary's Day, and I think we also give them one for Christmas. And those gifts are always given by my wife and me. My wife and me. Like, we usually make flowers. We do flowers for Secretary's Day because Charlotte's very creative, and it's also less expensive. She goes out and buys the stuff and makes them herself. I mean, it's a lot cheaper than going down to Nans and Craft and paying, you know, gazillions of dollars for, like, eight secretaries. That's a lot of flowers. Now, that's a lot of money. So just go down to Kmart or something. Let her buy them. She can put them together, stick them in some kind of little deal, put them on their desk, put a note, says from Danny and Charlotte. They know it came. They know I didn't make it. I mean, that's a dead ringer. And so, but they still know I paid for it. I mean, I put the money out. We're a great team. I paid for it. She put it together, and there it is. And I give gifts in that kind of way. You say, so when you travel, you don't come back with gifts for the ladies in your office? No, I don't. Why would I? I mean, I like them all. I even love them in the Lord. But I don't give them gifts, and I'm never going to. And if you do, I just think you're dumb. Okay, I just think you're dumb. Okay, that's all I'll say about it. I'll move on. I just think you're dumb. And you say, well, they might have their feelings hurt. Well, that's just tough. And let them have their feelings hurt. They won't die. They shall not surely die from this if they have their feelings hurt. They will be fine. They will go on with their life. And if they get their feelings hurt, then you've been sending some bad signals to begin with if their little feelings got hurt about something like that. That's enough said about that. Go back to the first page, and we'll go to number six. But guys, I'm dead serious. I'm just as serious as I can be. Our own churches have suffered in this area. We've had deacons that have walked away from their mate and their children for the woman that they met in the office or some other avenue. And again, I could spend the rest of the night and go past midnight and tell you story after story after story after story after story, not of just people I know, but of my friends who are no longer in the ministry because of adultery. And if it's happening that prevalently, that often in the ministry, I seriously doubt it's any less out there amongst the normal people either. And so we just need to be overly careful and cautious in this area. In fact, I don't think you can be too cautious. Now, number six, your marriage will get in trouble. If the wedding vows are considered conditional, marriage no longer a sacred covenant before God, and divorce begins to be considered as a possible solution to an unhappy situation. Now, folks, when we got married, we gave our word. And we gave our word not only to our mate, but also to God. I really do this. I may have told you this earlier. I doubt it because I think I'd remember. When I do premarital counseling, I make the premarital couple sign a wedding covenant. And it's got about 10 things on there that they commit to do before God and me. And after they've looked through it and they've seen that one of the things is divorce is not an option. And the other thing is if our marriage gets in trouble, we promise no matter where we are to find you and give you a chance to help us work on things. And after they've read through it, also they're committed to Christ. They're going to be active in a Bible-believing church. They're going to be pure before they get married and so on. After they get through reading the whole thing, I say, now, understand something. After you sign this, and you will sign it or I won't do your wedding. So if you want me to do your wedding and you sign this, now understand something. I'm going to pray for you. And I'm going to pray that if you ever get to a point where you're about to break this covenant, I'm going to pray in just a moment that God will kill you first, okay? And I'm serious as a heart attack. And they look at me like, you know, what? And I said, yeah, I'm going to pray that God will kill you. And I said, the reason I'm going to pray that God will kill you, I'd rather God kill you than you break your word with God. I think breaking your word with God's pretty serious. And I think breaking your word to your mate's pretty serious. And so I pray this prayer for me, and I do. On a regular basis, I pray, dear Lord, if for some reason in the future I ever begin to walk down a road that would potentially lead to my being unfaithful to Charlotte, dear Lord, just go ahead and kill me first. And I really would rather die first. I really would rather die than, again, disgrace Jesus, hurt the church, break her heart, lose the respect of my children. I'd just rather die. I'd rather God kill me, just take me out just like that before I would do that. And so I pray that prayer for every couple in their second premarital counseling session. And folks, to my knowledge as of right now, and I haven't married that many people because in recent years, because of what I do, I don't often do weddings. I don't know anybody that I've ever married that's divorced. Now, I'm sure there's someone out there that probably has done this, but as far as I know, every person I've ever married, they're still married because basically I work very hard to talk them out of it in advance. And I figure if I can talk them out of it, they don't need to get married to begin with. And so that's my philosophy, right or wrong. That's what I try to do because I know this fox of fatigue. If you leave a back door open when the kitchen gets hot, you'll run out. Let's just nail that puppy shut and there's no possibility of you leaving. In other words, we're stuck. Now, we can be stuck and be happy or we can be stuck and be sad. Well, if you're stuck, you ought to work toward happy rather than sad is the way I look at life. And that, therefore, gives you the motivation to stay after it. All right, number 7. Your marriage will also get in trouble if the man and the woman fail to understand, appreciate, and even enjoy just how really different they are from one another. I call this the fox of misunderstanding. Now, if you'll turn over to page 3, you'll see a number of areas that I've listed here that constitute this fox of misunderstanding. But you know what I've discovered over the years? I've discovered an analogy that really I can share in about 3 minutes that covers all of this page right here. So I could really just share this analogy, have prayer, and we can go home. I'm not going to do that, but I could do that. And here's the analogy. I discovered in life by just watching human persons that men can easily be classified as acting like dogs, and women can easily be classified as acting like cats. And that's the whole thing right there. Men are dogs. Women are cats. If you got that down, you got the whole thing. You say, why don't you expound on that a little bit? I'd be glad to. Let me ask you ladies to help me out with this. Let's take a dog, ladies. How do you have a happy dog? 3 things. Just 3 things. Number 1, what? Feed him. Number 2, play with him. And number 3, praise him. You're such a cute little doggy. I love you so much. Come here. And they'll roll over on their tummies, you know, and you scratch their tummies and little tails just going. And you got a happy dog. Just feed them, play with them, and tell them they're sweet little dogs. And you got a happy dog. Well, ladies, how do you have a happy man? Number 1, feed him. Number 2, play with him. And number 3, tell him, you're such a cute little husband. I just love you so much. Come here. And you'll have a happy husband too. But guys, women are not like dogs. No. Women are like cats. Think about it. You walk into a room one day, and you look over there, and suddenly there's a cat. That cat eyeballs you, and you eyeball that cat. And that cat, pretty little thing, might start moving in your direction. Why, it might even walk over and start rubbing up against your leg, and you might even get really brave and bend over and pick up that little cat and hold it, and it's purring, and you know, you scratch its little head, and it closes its eyes, and you said, man, and you put it down, and it runs out of the room, and you look over, and you say, man, that's a sweet little cat. That's a nice cat. And then 30 seconds later, that same cat appears in the doorway. You look at it. It looks at you, and it jumps for your face and tries to claw your eyeballs out. That's right. Same cat. But something happened to that cat in the other room, and its disposition has been radically altered for some unknown reason. Well, I have shared this insight all over the country. And a friend of mine in Dallas a few years ago sent me a thing on the over the internet entitled, Is It a Dog? Is It a Man? It May Be Both. Is It a Cat? Is It a Woman? It May Be Both. And there are 10 characteristics of the cat woman, and there are 10 characteristics of the dog man. Now, I'm going to share this with you. And by the way, every time I do this, people say, can I have that? Can I have that? Up here on this chair, there are 60 of these things. I didn't give it to you in advance because I wanted to just spring it on you. But if you want one per couple, there are about 60 of them sitting right there in that chair. You can take your little dog, cat, man, woman list home with you and just see if you kind of can resonate with this. And I want to say this to you as I prepare to look at this list. I want to say, first of all, the dog man list is funnier. I mean, it is gut-busting hilarious. But the cat woman list is kind of funny, too. And so, ladies, you know, here's the deal. In the age in which we live, will you get in trouble if you make fun of men? No. It's America's favorite pastime. But what happens if you start kind of messing with women? Ooh, watch out now. Better be careful, son. There's some women out there, and, man, their body language will change, and they're feeling what you're talking about. Who you think you are? I don't know no women like that. Well, yes, you do. You're one right there. I'm just talking about you right now. That's why you're acting that way. And so don't get all bent out of shape. Just have a little fun with it and see if maybe the Lord shows you something. So, is it a cat? Is it a woman? It may be both. Why? Well, number one, they usually do what they want. Number two, they rarely listen to you. Number three, they're totally unpredictable. Number four, when they're not happy, they whine. Number five, when you want to play, they want to be alone. Number six, when you want to be alone, they want to play. That's right. Number seven, they want you to cater to their every whim. Number eight, they're moody. Number nine, they can drive you nuts and cost you an arm and a leg. And number 10, they leave their hair everywhere. Now, we might debate 1 through 9. But there ain't no debate in number 10. I asked Charlotte yesterday, I said, honey, how did your hair wind up over here in my sink? You know, the person that created the two-sink house, that guy's a genius. I mean, that man has saved millions of marriages. And yet, even though she's got her sink and I've got my sink, her hair somehow leaps all the way over and lands in my sink. It's an amazing thing to me that I have yet. Have you ever found my hair in your sink? No, of course not. My hair stays in my sink where it belongs. But, of course, I prefer to stay on my head, but that's a whole other issue. But, you know, it's an amazing thing to me that this hair does this. My wife has deposited hair in states and countries she's never been to. I mean, it's an amazing thing that her hair can get in my toiletry bag. The other day, I found it in my toothbrush. That's pretty gross to my way of thinking. How her hair got in my toothbrush, in my travel bag, I don't know, but there it was. And so, yes, cats are little women in fur coats. Well, is it a dog? Is it a man? Oh, it may be both. Why? Well, number one, they lie around all day, sprawled on the most comfortable piece of furniture in the house. Number two, they can hear a package of food opening half a block away. But they can't hear you when you're in the same room with them. Number three, when they're not happy, they growl. Number four, when you want to play, they want to play. Number five, when you want to be alone, they still want to play. Number six, they're great at begging. Number seven, they will love you forever if you'll just feed them. Number eight, they leave their toys everywhere. Number nine, they do disgusting things with their mouths and then try and give you a kiss. And number 10, perhaps my favorite, they can look dumb and lovable and all at the same time. And so, yes, men have some things in common with their canine friends. And all of that is to simply say this. God made us different. He made us radically different. And on page 3, I've given you just a number of areas very quickly we'll hit that we just have to keep in mind. These are some of the places and some of the areas in which God made us different. Number 1, communication. Listening really is hard work for most men, but guys, it brings happiness to your wife. And talking can intimidate a man because he's not as good at it as is his wife. But guys, talking nurtures intimacy for your wife. Number three, men tend to report facts, kind of factoid oriented. But women are much more interested in sharing their feelings. And even when they ask you a question that you think would require a factual, substantive, content kind of response, that's not what she's looking for. She's again simply wanting to share her feelings about what's going on in her life from her perspective. That's why, again, when your wife asks a question, don't you guys, like me, feel compelled to offer a solution? But my wife, when she asks me a question, is not asking for a solution. She's wanting affirmation and assurance. Men, you see, we do tend to compartmentalize pretty rigidly. But women have this unbelievable ability to think integratively. They have this ability to cross many things at the same time and juggle many priorities at the same time, which most men are really good if you give them one thing at a time. You know, I do this, then this, then this, then this. But if you try to, you know, bring a bunch of things together, we're pretty close to shutting down because we're just not wired that way. And then finally, men are not really good at responding to hints, but women, oh yes, they are subtle and coded in their conversation from the day you marry them till the day that you die. Secondly, romance. Well, romance, as we've seen for a man, is a three-letter word, sex. Ladies, if you tell your husband, honey, sweetheart, darling, we're going to have a really, really romantic night this coming Friday night. It's going to be awesome, off the scale, unbelievable. But I do need to inform you in advance that there'll be no sex. He cannot process that kind of data. He begins to do things like this. I mean, it's just he just can't handle it. Because for a man, romance and no sex is a non sequitur. It does not follow. It does not make sense. So yes, man, romance, sex, highly visual, what he sees. But guys, for a woman, romance, lots of things, relational, personal, what she feels. Needs. Women need to feel valued. Guys don't really understand what that means because they need to feel successful. And women need to be heard, whereas men need to be praised. And women are wired by God to be interdependent. Men wrongly think they want to be self-sufficient, self-worth. Women value relational moments, something men have no idea what I'm talking about. And I'm still working on it myself. But I do know this. Men value occupational achievements. You get a group of guys together, and within no time at all, they'll each begin to kind of measure each other by asking, what do you do for a living? Now, even if you work outside the home, most of you would not get with a group of women, or men for that matter, and talk about what you do for a living. You'll very quickly move to the relationships of life because that's what means so much to you. That's why women value relational moments. That's why women fear neglect. Whereas men, neglect, I'm not really sure what that category means. No, but guys, are you worried about failing? Oh, yeah. Men, every man thinks in terms of do I succeed or do I fail? Five, time. Men do not really think about time. Women value quantity and quality time. And you know, I'm a baby boomer, like many of you. And I actually used to do in seminars, I used to actually make a statement that I always knew intuitively was not true. I just, in my heart, knew, it's not right, that's not right. Well, that's what they're saying. Well, I know, but it's not right. And now the data is out, and my intuition was correct. The great lie was this. As baby boomers, in a 20th and 21st century world, it's getting more and more difficult to give your children, for example, quantity time. But that's okay. That's okay, because as long as you make it up with quality time, they'll be all right. And then guess what we discovered? That's not true. Because what we discovered is this, for your child and probably for your mate, quality time is quantity time. Or let me say it in a rhetorical question format. When do your children want you? Answer, when they want you. Isn't that brilliant? But it's true. They want you when they want you. And if you're not there, they don't get you. And you can't program it. You can't, you know, factor it in. I was reading this morning a statement by Howard Hendricks, who is the wonderful Bible teacher at Dallas Seminary. And when his children got older, and he does a lot on marriage and family, he asked him one day, he said, "What is your favorite memory growing up? As you think now as a 30 and 40-year-old, thinking back to when you were small, what's your favorite memory?" And he was wondering, was it when we took them to Disneyland? Was it when we went to the Grand Canyon? Was it this? Was it that? And they said, "Oh, Dad, the thing we loved the most was wrestling with you in the floor on Saturday mornings. Just wrestling with Daddy in the floor on Saturday mornings. Not the Grand Canyon, not Disney World, not going to, you know, Dodger Stadium or whatever stadium. No, just wrestling with Daddy in the floor on Saturday morning." That's what they said they remembered most. And so, men, we do tend to go with the flow. Bad idea. Because that woman God gave you, she loves specific and creative ideas. And finally, mothers nurture. They provide a child's emotional support. Dads, oh, you provide strength. You provide a sense of self-worth, and you also are the one who gives your children their sense of security. I close with this. One of my favorite theologians is Irma Bombeck. Now, I know Irma Bombeck did not teach at seminary, but she should have, because she had real insight into the way life really works. And not too long before she died, she wrote a book entitled Family, The Ties That Bind and Gag. Sounds like an Irma Bombeck title. And in that book, on the second and third page, at the very beginning of the book, she tells a very tender story about her father, and I want to close with that this evening. Listen to what she wrote. "One morning, my father did not get up and go to work. He went to the hospital and he died the next day. I hadn't thought that much about him before. He was just someone who left and came home and seemed glad to see everyone at night." Did you catch that, guys? He's just someone who left, came home, and seemed happy, glad to see everyone at night. "He opened the jar of pickles when no one else could, and he was the only one in the house who wasn't afraid to go into the basement by himself. He cut himself shaving, but no one kissed it or ever got excited about it, and it was understood that when it rained, he got the car and brought it around to the front door. When anyone was sick, he went out to get the prescription filled, and he took lots of pictures, but he was never in them. Whenever I played house, the mother doll had a lot to do. I never knew what to do with the daddy doll, so I had him say, 'I'm going off to work now,' and I threw him under the bed. The funeral was in our living room, and a lot of people came, and they brought all kinds of good food and cakes. We had never had so much company before. Later, I went up to my room, and I felt under the bed for the daddy doll. When I found him, I dusted him off and I put him on my bed. He never did anything. I didn't know his leaving would hurt so much. And you see, guys, just by what did I say? He was just someone who left, came home, and seemed glad to see everyone at night. And by just doing that, just that little thing, he gave his daughter that security and that sense of self-worth that God intended for her to get, and to get primarily from her daddy." Let's close in prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you so much that you did make us different. Thank you so much that together we'll be so much better than we could ever be apart or alone. And I do pray tonight that you'll bless each marriage here, and even bless those who may be single but someday will be joined to a mate, that in all things, rather than allow our differences to tear us apart, may we indeed rejoice in them and thank you for them, because you bring into our lives people who compliment us, who where we're weak, they're strong, and where they're weak, we can be strong for them. And again, putting us together, we really can be a wonderful team to be used for your glory and for your honor. This we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.